friends. My name is Lauka, and I am the author of the historical novel Returning East. This novel is set on an ocean liner in Hong Kong and in China in 1954. I am very fascinated by Asia in general, South Asia, Southeast Asia, East Asia, and in particular China, where I lived for about 6 years. But I know I am not the only one. And this is why I teamed with other authors who also wrote at least one novel set in Asia or with an Asian protagonist. And because I was curious to hear more about their connections with this region, I decided to ask them and to record a few podcasts. Now, I am not a professional podcast host, so I hope you will forgive any mistakes I may have done. But the conversations I had with those authors are very interesting, and I hope you will enjoy listening to their experiences and to hear more about their books and about my book as well. In the second podcast, I am joined by two fellow authors, Larry Fain, author of The Flower Boat Girl, and Carol Brunger, author of The Nam Legacy. I also take the chance to answer the same questions that I asked them, and for this podcast might be a little bit longer. I hope that you will enjoy the conversation. So hello, everybody. I am very excited to have here two authors that are in the promotion Awesome Asia, the promotion presenting a few books which are set in Asia and dive deep in the Asian culture. And we have here Carol Brunger, I hope I said your name correctly, and Larry Fain. And I am Lauka. So maybe you can both introduce yourself. Who wants to start?
I'll start if you like. I'm Carol and I live in New Zealand. And I've been writing now for maybe about 8 or 9 years. And I am just working on my 8th book. I have self-published all of the books that I've written, and I've just finished a series set in Vietnam, which have won me 4 medals and a couple of other awards, and I'm quite proud of them and how they've done. And I manage a library as my day job. Mm-hmm. In a secondary school, and I write during weekends and school holidays. I think that's about it from me.
So for not being a full-time writer, you do write a lot.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I don't have a social life.
Okay, I see. Larry, what about you?
I mean, in terms of starting, first of all, I live in Hong Kong. I've lived here for more than half my life. I've been here for 37 years. Mm-hmm. I live in a small village on an outlying island with no cars. So it's kind of an idyllic life. In terms of starting writing, I like to tell this story that my mother was pressuring me from a very early age to be a doctor. I think those was the first words she said as I came out of the womb, is you're going to be a doctor. So one thing that was a great benefit of me, she taught me how to read at age 3. And, of course, this has really served me my whole life, but she had an ulterior motive for that because she loaded me down with books, children's books, about famous medical heroes like Dr. Albert Schweitzer and Florence Nightingale. She wanted to influence me into loving medicine, and she gave me medical books for children. But what happened was that I fell in love with the books, not the doctors and the nurses. I fell in love with the stories about them. Mm-hmm. And I learned to love reading stories, and especially from a very young age, stories based on true people and events.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I've been that way my whole life. And so I started writing and drawing at a very early age. And I, it's a long story, which I won't tell, but I started self-publishing at age 7.
Okay.
In primary school, writing stories with some friends, and we self-published a magazine. And I went on like that in secondary school, and I was always working on the school papers and writing. And so I studied writing and history and historical research in university mm-hmm. with the intention of writing historical fiction. And then life kind of took me in another direction. And again, it's kind of a strange story, which I won't get into, but I became a cartoonist mm-hmm. in Honolulu, Hawaii, of all places.
Okay.
And that's where I met the woman who became my wife, and she was from Hong Kong. And so I was working as a cartoonist in Hawaii. I was working in an animation studio later in Los Angeles. And then 2 years after we were married, we went to Hong Kong to visit her sister for 2 weeks. And I never left. I just absolutely felt like this place is meant for me. I felt the weirdest thing. I felt no culture shock. I felt like I'm just sliding right in here. And
yeah.
So I looked for work as an illustrator. And within 2 weeks, I had more work than I could handle. I had to hire an assistant. I told her, we're staying.
Yeah.
She was a bit reluctant, but we stayed. And I ended up as a newspaper cartoonist for many years. But skipping ahead, the newspaper cartooning ended because of politics, and I did other things here. But I've always supported myself with creative work. And so I did animation. I did writing for magazines. And then leading to this book that I published last year, The Flower Boat Girl, I learned of this story of this Chinese woman pirate
mm-hmm.
From a friend of mine. Because you know, I've been living on this island called Lantau Island. It's an outlying island outside of Hong Kong. You get here by ferry. So I know a lot of people, local people, fishermen and farmers, people like that. And this one guy is a sailor. He runs a boat between this island and the city as a cargo boat. And one day he was telling me that he remembered his grandmother singing a folk ballad about this Chinese woman pirate who was based on this island. I thought, oh. Wow, you remember the words? And he didn't remember the words.
Okay.
Sorry
to interrupt you. You're already going into the book. I would like to...
Yeah, sorry. It just kind of... Oh, you can edit that. I'm sorry.
That's fine. The introduction, and also give Carol the chance to tell us how she started writing.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I know that one gets, of course, very, taken by the whole story. That's quite
general.
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you want to just introduce yourself as well?
Yeah, that would be good. Thank you for asking. So my name is Lauca, my pen name, and I'm originally from Italy, but I've been living in Germany now for about 11 years. And I work as internal auditor in a university, so I am surrounded by figures, nothing creative at all. And I actually miss this. I miss this thing in my daily life. What else can I say about me? Well, I lived in China for 6 years, but I think we can discuss about this later on when we talk about our connection with Asia.
What about starting writing?
I started writing, I attended a couple of core creative courses here in Germany, just one of those courses you do to fill up your free time, but I really enjoy it. And One day I decided I wanted to start writing. I wanted to challenge myself to write a whole book. And actually, I started writing the book in September, 11th of September 2008 is the first file I have of my book, Returning Easter. But in the meantime, you know, I was delayed because I took other projects. I was involved with a political party for the European elections here in Germany. But this idea of writing was there. And I said, okay, I need to find a way to actually keep a writing practice, a regular writing practice. And this is why I started actually creating a website in May 2020. And I published micro stories there. So I committed myself to write two micro stories per month, at least, and maybe one or two articles per month, you know, depending on the time. And that was really something that kept me going. And eventually I went back to the book and I did finish the book. So this is a little bit my story about how I started writing. I think, Carol, you didn't have the chance to tell us how you started writing, right?
No. Can I ask first, though, what is a, how many words is a micro story? I haven't heard that term.
Well, actually, I define them between 400 and 600 words, but I noticed some of the words, some of the stories, the micro stories I have are much shorter, so shorter, maybe 100, 150, 200. I mean, I think it really depends. And as I said, the idea behind was just to sit down and sparkle my imagination, because if you just wait to have the time in busy life and doing other kind of things in your you know, daily job, but you will never sit down and write. So this is at least my experience. So, and I thought, okay, micro stories is feasible. They are short. You know, I can do it. You know, the key point is to make your commitment as easy as possible so that you don't find excuses not to do them.
Can I ask you a question, though?
Yep.
Why do you choose to write in English rather than your native language?
I write in English, first of all, because I read a lot of in English. When I first moved to China, the first time I moved to China, basically, I had no access to other books because my Chinese was not good enough and there were almost no French books. And the only foreign books that I could find more easily, at least, were in English. And therefore, I started reading in English. And then I lived in different countries where English was the language I used for my work. And therefore, you know, I feel there is a connection. And also it allows me to give, you know, some different perspective when I write and some distance, because I don't want to write autobiographical things. And the language is also a way to create a barrier. And I love languages. So I think it's very interesting and challenging also to use a language, not my mother language. And yes, also there is more market. I mean, definitely you'll reach more people if you write in English rather than if you write in Italian.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Back to Carol. So how did you start writing?
I used to read a lot. I was an avid reader. And I read a lot of, as a young teenager, read a lot of Mills and Boons. And I could read one in a day or an evening. And after a while, I got to thinking, I can write these. They're really easy. And so that's what I did. I set out to write one of these. I wrote 50,000 words and thought it was fantastic. And so I typed it all up and got it bound and mailed it off to Mills and Boons. And I got a response back that said, this is a great story. However, it doesn't fit into any of our categories. And but I think we think that would make an excellent digital book or an ebook. And at the time, I thought to myself, what is an ebook? What, like, I've never heard of those, because this was quite a while back now. I've never heard of that. And so I popped it in a drawer and over the years shifted from house to house and found it again. later on. But in the meantime, I had grown up watching TV programs. The first one I got hooked on was MASH. Everybody will have heard of that, which was set in the Korean War. And later on in my early 20s, I started watching China Beach and Tour of Duty and was totally fixated on the Vietnam War. And just I couldn't get my hands on enough stuff. And so I got married and life kind of took over. And you know, when you have children and what have you, and different things happened. And so the idea of writing was kind of put away. And this book, I found the Mills and Boons one, I found that after several house shifts and after my marriage had ended. And I pulled it out of a box that I was unpacking. And the box had been taped up for several years. And I thought, oh, I think I'll just read this, you know, for a bit of a laugh, really. And I actually really liked the storyline. I thought it was actually quite naive and quite immature in places. But I actually really liked the storyline, and I thought, oh, wow, I can actually do something to this. I can improve it because it's got a good grounding there. There's all the basics are kind of there. And so that's what I did. So I worked on that I had no idea what I was doing, but I worked on it over 3 or 4 years and gave it to some friends to read, and I gave it to my daughter to read, and she said, hey mum, this is really good, you should put this on Amazon, or you should try and sell it, publish it. And so that's what I did. And I was really thrilled. It was it was a finalist in two competitions, and it won in another competition, so I was really rapt about that. For my very first book. So that was really encouraging. And so that was it. People actually started to buy the book on Amazon, and it went on to be my biggest seller. And it's been now taken over by the Vietnam books, but it was for quite a few years my biggest seller. And so I was wrapped. So then, of course, I was encouraged to write more. And they always say, write what you know best, or write about what you know. And I thought, well, actually, I know a lot about the Vietnam War. That's what I'm going to write about. So that's how I got writing about that subject. And that's kind of how my writing started. So it started through a love of reading.
That's nice. That's an interesting story. And Larry, do you want to add anything about how you started writing, besides the story that you read lots of?
How books? I started writing? Well, I started writing as a child, like I said, and in terms of writing this book in particular, it came out of just this fascination that I developed over the character of this Chinese woman pirate that I heard about through this friend of mine, this boat captain. And like I said earlier, I had studied historical research in university, and that had a big effect on me, because my mentor, the thing that he trained me in the most, was how to develop my historical bullshit meter. And what that means is when you at least even become a little bit knowledgeable about a topic and you're researching, something might come along and it just feels wrong. It might be considered a real source, but it just feels wrong. And so he taught me how to use that feeling and then go deeper and try to find the source of those things that feel wrong. And then you understand why they are wrong. And the reason I bring this up is because that's what inspired my book, because I was interested in this Chinese woman pirate. I had no idea that, I'm going to write a book about her. Mm-hmm. I was just interested. I was doing other things. I was doing animation and other stuff. This wasn't my work. And although I had published many books of my cartoons, and I'd published some books of humorous essays all locally here in Hong Kong, I had never seriously sat down to write a novel since university days, and that was not something that was publishable. So I was doing like we all do. I look on Wikipedia. I looked in different places to find out more about this woman. And I started realizing this doesn't make sense. A lot of, from what I knew about Chinese culture, from what I knew about the specific culture of the boat people, because I know a lot of them, things just didn't sit right with me. So I dug deeper and I found that, again, long story short, I found a lot of these things were based on an unreliable source. And I was able to trace back to this original unreliable source.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, okay, if it's all based on nonsense, where can I find the real stuff? And so I just dug deeper and deeper, looking in Chinese sources, English sources, other language sources. I even taught myself Portuguese so I could read Portuguese sources because at the time she was operating, a lot of Portuguese officials in the then colony of Macau were writing about the pirates. And I started piecing together this story, and I consulted historians who were experts on Chinese maritime history. I went to maritime museums in Shanghai and a very good one here in Hong Kong, and I just gathered all this information.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'd sit up late at night, I'd have my computer in my lap, and I'd tell my wife, look what I just discovered, this is fascinating. Did you know that, you know, she must have been gone to Vietnam to fight in the civil war there that mm-hmm. happened in, you know, the early 19th century. I said, I got to find a book about her. Where's mm-hmm. the book about her? And my wife finally said, don't you get it? There's no book about her. You have to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw a quote by Toni Morrison, the Nobel Prize winning author, who said exactly the same thing. If there's a book you want to read, and no one has written it yet, it's your duty to write it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I decided this is going to be my mission.
Yeah.
And oh, how I regret that decision sometimes, because yeah. I spent close to 13 years on the research and writing of this book,
okay.
digging deeper and deeper and deeper. But there is no one else in the 200 years that this story has been sitting out there in plain sight. A lot of historians have studied the Chinese pirates. A lot of them have studied, you know, the socioeconomic history of that time and about Chinese shipbuilding. No one took the trouble of gathering all these pieces and putting them in order and mm-hmm. working out what happened with her life. And then what happened too is, of course, I thought, well, I'll write the definitive biography. But again, what came out of my historian background is that there are a lot of gaps in the story. There are a lot of unanswered questions. And so the only way to fill them in was with conjecture.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then it's not really a biography. It's a guesswork kind of biography. But I could take other things that I was discovering and I could make qualified, educated guesses of what actually happened. And while I was all doing all this, I became really interested, not just in the history, but in who this woman was.
Yeah.
What kind of personality was she? So, I mean, I'm sorry I'm talking so long. I'll keep it very brief. But she was sold into prostitution by her family
mm-hmm.
at an early age. She worked for 13 years on a flower boat, which is a floating brothel
yes.
in Guangzhou. And what I figured out was that at some point she bought her freedom, probably at around age 26. She had paid off her family's debt and she was able to release herself from this indentured servitude, bought her freedom. And 6 months later, she was kidnapped by pirates and she was forced into marriage with this pirate captain, Cheng Yat. And gradually she kind of manipulated him into making the best of the circumstance and really building this pirate enterprise. Later, he died in a storm and she took over. Now, what kind of personality was this, that she was given the worst that life could offer, you know, sold away, living as a prostitute, kidnapped, and living as a criminal, a pirate. And yet she rose to become the most powerful pirate in history. She commanded hundreds of ships, 18,000 men. Blackbeard the pirate commanded 5 ships and 500 men. And he's always the one you think of as the most powerful pirate in history. So what personality, you know, led to this? And my wife's a psychologist. So a lot of times we'd have after dinner walks where I'd say, well, this Yang, the character's name, did this at this point and this later. What's the personality type that connects them? So it had to be a novel because I wanted to explore not just the history, but her personality and her essence. And so that's my long-winded answer of how I came to write this book.
Well, that's really a fascinating story. Just one question. So you actually used original sources, I mean, in original language. So I guess you can speak Chinese, Cantonese, English is your mother tongue. You said you learned Portuguese.
Well, I speak Cantonese. I'm not very good with Putonghua. It's not the language here in Hong Kong. Yes. And, you know, of course, I was learning, you know, the specific slang of the boat people. So pages and pages of notes, right? I'd sit with them, I interview them, and they give me all their different slang and their jargon and so on. So, but I'm not very good at reading Chinese. But but one kind of interesting thing is there's very few sources in Chinese about these pirates.
Okay.
Why is that? Because the Chinese never romanticized pirates like Westerners. Pirates were criminals. They're criminals. So what you find is court records, magistrates' records for the times when pirates were arrested. And that's it. You don't find story. Only this one folk song that I told you I heard, that my friend had heard from his grandmother. Other than that, you don't find pirate stories in Chinese. You don't find them glorifying them as these kind of colorful rebels. They're just criminals. So the first accounts are in English and Portuguese. There's a few in German. There's a few in French.
Okay.
And but there's Chinese accounts of other things that I was able to piece together. So it was a real hodgepodge of research.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I can imagine. But for sure, it's a very rewarding work. I think research, it's fun.
It's fun. And as anyone who's ever researched knows, it's a rabbit hole. You think, now, wait a minute. You know, what size bowls did they use to eat rice with? Did they use chopsticks on the ships, you know, or did they just eat with their fingers? And, you know, and what shape were the wine casks? Were they the kind that have kind of a ceramic cover or, you know, and, you know, you can get so bogged down in the details that it becomes a procrastination. And I'm sure, I'm sure you have similar stories. And so does Carol of being bogged down in the minutia of research.
I guess maybe for us it was a little bit easier because it was not so back in history, right, Carol? So your stories are taking place in Vietnam. Is it exactly during the Vietnam War or before, after?
Yeah, the stories are set. They move from New Zealand through Vietnam and back to New Zealand again. The Vietnam War really, from a New Zealander's perspective, I guess. The research was, there was a lot of research done. I think, I love it. But for me, it's the fine line between what you include in the story and what you leave out. And I think what you leave out is actually more important or just as important as what you put in. Because I've read books that people have read that they've actually included too much and it kills the story dead. I mean, you just can't get over all the details and it actually slows the telling of the story down. So it's a fine line to get to know where to stop.
It is true, yeah.
I agree. Yeah, I just read a book like that, which had so much overpowering detail that I couldn't finish.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, It's all exotic and interesting, and I guess, yeah, it's hard to stomach.
So. Yeah. Well, for me, it was the same. I read a lot. I use also, of course, my own experiences. But in particular, I found the two websites that were fascinating. One, maybe you know about this website, Larry. It's called Guailo, I think. Yeah. Maybe the pronunciation is not very good, but you know, it's a website where they have plenty of pictures, lots of recounts of stories of families and so on. And so I read lots of things on this website, and then you know, I just picked a few interesting points. Like for example, they were talking about an American guy who had a restaurant, American restaurant in Kowloon, and he was very fat. I mean, it was just a minor thing, but that gives a little bit of flavor to the story. But then, of course, you can't put everything inside, but you need to research also to create the atmosphere of the book, to create the background of your characters. This was at least for me the case. I mean, I wrote pages about you know, also minor characters, just to know where they are from and what they do and so on. But then what comes in the book is much less.
Yeah, I think the more you research, you don't necessarily need to include it, but it makes you more knowledgeable when you write.
Yes, then you get the feeling, exactly.
Yeah.
Lauka, you haven't told us what inspired your story. I mean, I started reading it, and I wonder, is there a true story that is behind this? You have someone traveling to Asia in the 1950s, right?
Yeah, it's 1954. What is interesting, actually, the story is completely made up, but a couple of weeks ago, I found a small article on in the South China Morning Post, and it was was just a brief news about a guy, I think it was American, who traveled from Hong Kong, Hong Kong, he went to Macau, and then from there he indeed went to China by boat, illegally. And I found it fascinating because my story is more or less this way, but I didn't know about this US guy. The inspiration came actually from a poster, from an advertising poster of a French shipping company, which is called Messagerie Maritime. They had an office in Hong Kong as well. And basically, you know, at that time, there were these large ocean liners traveling, sailing, you know, from Europe to Africa, to Asia, to South America. And that was also a very interesting website. And there were lots of information about different ocean liners and relates from the people who were on board. And of course, I said, yeah, well, that's pretty interesting. Maybe I could I could take a person, a hero, traveling, you know, somewhere. And then, of course, because of my connection to China, I went to see whether this ocean liner also had a route to Asia. And indeed, there was one. And in particular, the ocean liner, the Cambodge, was built in 1952. And I thought, yeah, that's an interesting time. It's the time also there was still Indochina war, and was around that time, and the Battle of Dien Bien Phu. And I thought to connect to anchor the story in these historical details. And this is why it became actually an historical book, because this poster in this ocean liner gave me the time frame. So I decided, okay, 1954, a couple of years later. And this is how the story started. But I did not plot the story. I was, every time I sat down in front of the computer, I didn't know what I was going to write. So it's completely, out of my brain and my imagination. It was not a real story at all. And sometimes I had, of course, troubles because I wanted my protagonist to do something, and then I realized that in that time it was not possible. Like, he wanted to have a new passport in Shanghai, but there was no embassy in Shanghai at that time. I said, oh, okay, what am I going to do now with them? So that was also a fun story.
So was any of it based on your own experience then?
I took inspiration from my own experience. If I experience myself, the people in China look at me with big eyes in 1996, the first time I was in China, then I'm sure in 1954 it must have been even, a bigger event to meet a foreigner there. Therefore, there are some things that I've been inspired from my experiences or from, there is a market scene in Hong Kong. I imagine that at that time it was also very similar, but it's not my story, not in that sense. Do we want to maybe have a brief introduction of the book and where readers can find the book?
Sure. Do you want to start?
Or Carol, let's start.
Okay. So the Nam Legacy can be found on Amazon. It's only on Amazon. It's not wide, it can be bought in paperback or ebook. It's in Kindle Unlimited, so if readers belong to that, they can grab it for free. And you can perhaps read more about it on my website if you want to.
Okay. Do you also want to give a short summary of the book or whatever, however you want to present the book itself? Because it's a series, and this is the first one of the series, right?
It is. Are we going to come back to the research thing? Because I haven't covered that yet. Or not. We're just doing this first.
I'm interested, yeah.
Yes, of course. So sorry for forgetting you.
Yeah, I mean, I just wondered whether we were just going to go and do some, just talk about our books and then come back to those questions.
Go ahead, tell whatever you want.
Okay. So I'll go with the research thing. First of all, the connection with Asia. I have no connection with Asia whatsoever. I don't have any family member who was in Vietnam during the war years. And so that's completely out of left field. And my only connection was watching those TV programs. I used to work as a civilian in the army for a few years, and my boss there was a Vietnam veteran. And when I told him that I intended to write a novel about the Vietnam War, he said to me that he was a soldier, he did two tours over there, and that was it. He wouldn't talk to me about any aspect of it. So I thought, oh, well, that's not a very good sign. Why is this? So anyway, I decided that I had by this time collected quite a lot of books, and I had quite a big library on Vietnam War related stuff. But I needed to do a lot more research. So I then started to undertake hundreds and hundreds of hours of watching documentaries, watching movies. I went back and watched these TV programs again because with China Beach and Tour of Duty, and especially Tour of Duty, the producers and directors, I guess, brought in a lot of Vietnam veterans to actually help with the series. And so they took all the actors through what they couldn't do, and what was realistic, what didn't work, what wasn't realistic, how people reacted, how they held their weapons. So in fact, that program was actually quite a good resource. As compared to some of the films, which are not, they're quite, you know, it's, they're not realistic at all in a lot of cases. But anyway, the more I researched, the more I decided that actually I couldn't tell the story I was going to tell in one book. So my, I was only ever going to write one book, and it was going to be the book. And so the more I researched, I found out that it didn't matter where the veterans, which country the veterans came from, be it New Zealand, Australia, America, they all were suffering the same problems and their stories were all the same. And there were cases of PTSD and health problems and a whole lot of things integrating back into society and home life after their tours had finished, all sorts of things. And so to do it justice, I was going to have to take one topic at a time and try and get that message through. So the first book then focused on the theme around PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and or syndrome. And so that's what I did. And I then had to get into the head. I had to get into the mind of a 19-year-old boy going to Vietnam for the first time and what they encountered and how they dealt with things, a Kiwi boy. And that was actually quite hard to do. Somebody my age getting into a, you know, a 19-year-old's head back in the, you know, 60s and 67. The first book started, well, it started before then, but they went to Vietnam in 67 in the story. So everything was geographically correct and everything followed the historical timeline. It's just the characters and that are fictional, and the things that they went through and did were fictional. However, they are realistic. So and I think I've had quite a number of untold veterans contact me and tell me that the stories are so realistic that it has transported them back into that situation. And I've had grown men ring me in tears saying that they'd just finished reading the book and they can't thank me enough for writing it and putting the stories out there. And I think it's the reason why they've done that is because of my research, but because I actually decided to totally immerse myself in the Vietnam War, which it did take its toll. But I got up in the morning and researched or watched videos. I went to work. I worked through my morning tea break so that I could have a longer lunch. And in that lunch break, I wrote. I got home from work. I wrote. I spent evenings watching documentaries, and this rolled on 24/7. And so this affected my whole life. And we didn't eat decent meals because I was too busy with wrapped up in Vietnam and the war, and we just ate shit food. And my husband, my poor husband at the time, was having to feed himself all the time, and you know, like, when are we going to get a decent meal? And he kept the household going while I did this.
Order some Vietnamese meal.
Pardon?
Order some Vietnamese takeout meal.
So, yeah, I was very lucky. He did all the washing and the cleaning, and he kept us, he kept me alive, I think, during the time that I was researching that. But in saying that, at the end of it, I came out of that with secondary, what's called secondary PTSD. And that's what spouses get, and family members of frontline workers at responders and what have you get. It was a pretty traumatic time for me as well. And I had to try and get myself out of that once I'd got in, because I was well in over my head. But at the end of the day, it was worth it. And then I went on to do another book about Agent Orange and the chemical abuse. And then I went on to do another one about the civilian nurses that went over from New Zealand. And I've done others about Huey pilots and, another one about a soldier coming back and trying to integrate back into society and what it was like. And so I've covered quite a bit of it. And I've had people from different sectors contact me and tell me, you know, I had a nurse email me and say, you wrote my story, you know, who helped you? Who have you been speaking to? You wrote my story. And I said, well, actually, I haven't spoken to anyone. I've just researched this. And then I've turned it into fiction. I've not turned that story into fiction, but I've created a story set in those settings, and I've just come up with this. This is all fiction. She was just amazed. And also I've had a lot of veterans from America contact me and tell me that the story is just, the stories are wonderfully accurate and just amazing and a real step back. And in some cases, been very therapeutic. I don't think they're ever going to be, like a get rich quick series of books, for the sheer fact that the Vietnam War wasn't popular and it's still not popular. And I can't speak for other countries, but in this country, the veterans are not, I don't know, not flavour of the
month.
Flavour of the month, flavour of the year, flavour of the decade, flavour of the last 50 years. It was, my aim was to put some books out there on that subject, right, and try and keep those stories alive, and just so that Joe Bloggs on the street can pick up a book and it's pretty accurate, historically correct about, you know, in relation to what happened with New Zealand people who were serving at the time. And I think I've managed to do that. And I think the amount of research that I did my imagination to a huge degree has helped me to achieve that. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I'm just wondering, among the New Zealanders who served in Vietnam, was there a feeling that this was America's war and therefore they resented being there? Is this something you bring up in any of your books?
No, it's not. Because I think they went because Australia went. So you may have heard of the Anzacs. Australia and New Zealand usually go together. New Zealand didn't want to get involved. We kind of got pressured into getting involved. Australia went first and then we followed. And the guys were over there because of communism, the threat of communism, of course, right, and because Vietnam was quite close to New Zealand, really. But when they came back, because of the way they were treated when they came back, they quickly learned that actually this wasn't all that it was cracked up to be, and a lot of them realised that they shouldn't have been there. They shouldn't have been there at all. So, they were doing a job. They were doing what they were told to do, like, anyone in the military. And, I think it wasn't until they got back that some of them had their sort of ideas or enlightened about their, you know.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so many fascinating things actually happen in Asia, even though not necessarily all positive. But Asia is so vibrant and rich with stories.
I think too, what helped was that When I had finished the first draft of this Naam legacy, I actually went over to Vietnam. I decided that I needed to go over there and experience the senses. So it didn't matter how much I heard people talking about the monsoons or talking about this or that aspect of it. I needed to be able to go and smell the smells and experience the monsoons and check out the distances from, you know, Saigon out to Nui Dat, where the New Zealand and Australians were camped, and just different things like that. Have a look at the different areas and get a feel for the people and the food and eat off the street vendors and all that kind of thing. So I did that, and I took my younger sister with me, and we spent 3 weeks around. I spent the first week and a half going to all the places that the New Zealanders had been to and having a look at the major places in the south of Vietnam, and then the other week and a half was pure holiday. And we travelled north, and we had a look at all of a lot of the battle sites, major American sites, where they had clashes. But it was really interesting to see where the New Zealanders had been. And my sister said to me, this has just been an amazing holiday. And she said, it's been like having a tour guide with me the whole time, telling me about all these, everywhere we went, you knew stuff and you could tell me what happened anywhere. And she said, it was amazing. I've never had a trip like this before. And she's, you know, really well travelled. But it was great. You know, I was in the monsoons and got wet and absolutely drenched and then dry again. You know, 10 minutes later, I was bone dry, zoomed around the places on motorbikes and went up back roads that were, you know, dodgy, and through little alleyways on motorbikes that, you know, you had to pull your knees and your elbows in because the gap was so tiny, and just lived off street food and visited cemeteries full of Viet Cong graves and just, you know, stuff that made your skin crawl. And just, you know, I spent a lot of the time crying. It was really emotional, and including on our trip back from Saigon, or Ho Chi Minh City as it is now, we flew north. And as we were leaving the city, my sister looked over at me and she said, "Are you crying again?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Why?" And I said, "Because I'm leaving Saigon and I'm leaving my characters behind. I've got characters here. And those characters were so ingrained in me, were part of me and had been for so long, and they were so young and I knew what was going to happen to them, and they were there and I felt like I couldn't rescue them. I had to leave them behind." And, yeah, it was just so emotional. And I sat on this plane bawling my eyes out over fictional characters. It was just, yeah, just, I don't know, but it was, but yeah, it was a real experience. And, you know, I think hopefully I've managed to get that into the book. So, yeah. And in fact, I've got it into all of the books, quite a few of them now have won medals. So, yeah, that's really cool.
Well, this is the privilege of being actually an author, and the more so an historical author, you can really get involved in the stories and your life expands, you know, tenfold.
Yeah, it does. I've met so many people, and I've had so many people come up to me and tell me stories, and I go and talk to groups quite a lot and do quite a lot of talking. And, so many people come up to me afterwards and tell me about, you know, relations that they've had, an uncle or a brother or, you know, a father or somebody that went to served in Vietnam, and how it affected their lives. And, you know, one woman said that when she was a child, there was a man lived over the fence next door, and they used to tease the hell out of him because he used to act funny. And she said, "Now I know that it was because he was a Vietnam veteran and he couldn't help that." And she said, "I feel so bad now." She said, "I really, really would love to find him and apologise to him for what I did when I was a kid." And, you know, just amazing stories. I've heard some amazing stories.
Absolutely. Larry, over to you. Do you want to add something more about your book and, of course, where to find and any links? whatever you want to.
Okay. I mean, like I said, my mission for this book, and it was a mission. I never knew what I'm going to do with it. And it is self-published, and that was a matter of choice because I've been involved in traditional publishing, and I'm kind of fed up with it. I think it's an old way of looking at how to get books to people. But anyway, I compiled this story. We were talking earlier about too much historical detail. My original draft was like twice as long as it is, and I had to cut this and cut that and cut this, and oh, this battle's so interesting and that battle's so interesting. But I came down to the essence of the story and had to always, like I said, focus on what it is about what carried this woman through her life. And so it's actually two books. I'm working on the follow-up one now. So this first book follows Yang. Her name was Shek Yang. And that's one of the first things that I noticed was wrong, because in all the accounts, like on Facebook, not on Facebook, what am I talking about? Wikipedia and so on, they use the Mandarin pronunciations of all these different characters' names, and they didn't speak Mandarin. They spoke Cantonese. And these were uneducated people who would not have learned, they would not have attended any kind of schooling where they would have learned Putonghua. And so they spoke Cantonese, so I stuck to the Cantonese pronunciations of their names. So this follows her from right after she's liberated herself from the flower boats to her kidnap through being forced into marriage and coming up against some kind of life-defining moments where she realized that there's no going back, that she's a pirate now, whether she likes it or not. There's an incident which I believe is what convinced her to stay. The pirates are then recruited as a mercenary navy to fight in the Vietnam Civil War. We've been talking about Vietnam, and this is a civil war that happened 150 years earlier.
Okay.
And the pirates became a mercenary navy, and so she certainly went to Vietnam with them and fought in a key naval battle, and so on. So it brings up through her eventually taking power among the pirates. I don't want to tell the story now.
Of course.
And so she eventually outwitted all these different really powerful pirate leaders, all men, who all felt that they had they were the ones ordained to take over this big pirate confederation that had been put together. And somehow she did it. She put herself in that place. So, I speculated, there's no account of exactly what she did, but by using what historical research I had, I speculated on how she was able to accomplish this. And she became the pirate queen. And that's how this book ends. The second book is going to follow the rest of her career as a pirate, which is just as fascinating. I mean, there are just so many interesting things.
But then you don't need 13 years of research anymore. You already
No, the research is done, but it's still going to take me a couple years to write, and just get it right.
Okay? Yes.
Because I had to rewrite this many times. I threw out the whole thing at one point. I'd written 130,000 words several times, at least 8 rewrites, and I realized it's not working, so I threw it away, and I started all over from scratch. And then it worked. Then it clicked. It took that long to find the essence of the story. A lot of people who self-publish, they write very quickly and put things out, and I just couldn't do that with this. It had to be done right. Like I said, it wasn't a money-making venture. It was a mission. It was a labor of love. Of course, it's been reasonably successful, and there's an audiobook version coming out this month, and I'm not producing it. It's an award-winning Chinese-American narrator who's doing the voice, the book The Flower Boat Girl, I think is just an interesting character study. It brings you into this world of this kind of dark world of the Chinese pirates in the South China Sea at the beginning of the 1800s. And you know, just like Carol was saying, I immersed myself in this world too. I mean, that's where I was living. And sometimes I'd have to slap myself out of it to have a normal conversation with my wife, because sometimes she gets so sick and tired of our after dinner walks where I'm talking about what the pirates did. Right. And I wanted her psychological feedback from, you know, what the characters. And at one point she said, enough, can we talk about something else? Why don't I tell you about my day?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The difference is she's a psychologist, so she can't tell me about her clients. She has client-patient confidentiality. So she never can tell me much about her day. So it's always the burden is on me to tell about my day. And my day was spent on the South China Sea in the year 1803. You know, battling against, you know, a foreign opium clipper ship. And so, you know, that's how it was.
Absolutely.
But anyway, if anyone's interested in the book, I have a website called piratequeenbook.com. You can get the first chapter free, and that first chapter ebook also includes quite a few historical notes, which are not included in the actual published book, but giving some historical background and how I started the research, some facts about her, facts about the boat people. And so, you know, you can get that and see if you like it, see if you're interested in the writing. It's called The Flower Boat Girl, piratequeenbook.com. And I hope, you know, you might be curious to have a look.
I'm definitely curious as well. Well, I'm curious about all the books that actually have been, you know, browsing now. So we just need to help to have time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you also have a paperback, Larry, or is just an ebook?
No, I I went all the way because it's a local story. I actually printed books to distribute here in Hong Kong.
Okay.
But there's also paperback and hardcover and ebook and soon audiobook editions available on any of the regular sites, you know, on Amazon, on Barnes and Noble. It's available in Australia, New Zealand, you know, on, you can order it. That is, you're not going to be able to walk into a bookshop and find it. But yeah. I do get enough orders from Australia, New Zealand, because it's more local
in
that part of the world than it is for US and UK. But and what's really shocked me is I did produce a hardcover version. It's really beautiful. I hired a wonderful cover designer, and the hardcover edition has this slip cover, which is so gorgeous. But what amazes me is how many people are spending $26 to buy the hardcover version. And it occurred to me that a lot of people who enjoy historical fiction, myself included, really like big fat books in hardcover. They just like them. I like them. If it's not more outrageously expensive than the paperback, I'll get the hardcover version. And there's people out there like that. And so I've sold a lot more hardcover versions than I ever anticipated I would. And it looks nice on your shelf.
Great.
I mean, I don't want to talk about sales so much, but I'm pleased with the reception I'm getting. And the other thing, you know, Carol's talking about the validation she gets from veterans who've read this. That I've been getting validation, one, from Chinese people. I've been invited to give talks to historical societies here in Hong Kong and also online in various places around the world. And I get comments from Chinese people that I got it right in terms of the characterizations. And also, like Carol's talking about getting into the head of a 19-year-old boy, I had to get into the head of a 26-year-old Chinese woman prostitute from 200 years ago. And one of the greatest compliments I ever got was I had been invited to give a talk at the Hong Kong Museum of Art. Mm-hmm. And one of the directors came up to me right before my talk and said, "You really know how Chinese women think." And she was Chinese. So I thought, wow, wow, that's the greatest compliment I've ever received about this book. So it's been validating to me that I, without a degree, I mean, I have a bachelor's degree in history. I'm not a PhD. And yet I've been invited to speak to historical societies in front of genuine scholars. Mm. Who then afterwards asked me all these penetrating questions and had little debates over minutiae about, you know, the pronunciation of different words in Cantonese, boat people slang. I mean, that to me has been really satisfying to be that my research has paid off in a way that even scholars are interested in it.
Yeah. So, I'm sure it was. That's great.
I mean, one other thing, and that is one of my mentors is one of the world's leading experts on Chinese maritime history. And he's American. He's not a Chinese American either. But he spent his entire career researching this time period on the South China coast. And I asked him, I said, "Look, there's several things in my book," and which he proofread for me for any historical facts or problems. And there are several things I brought up about her experience in Vietnam, which I pieced together. It isn't in any of the major source material. And I asked him, "Can I get away with passing off this as historical information?" And he said, "We don't know everything yet. You've made a discovery, Larry. Congratulations. This is why we still have historians, because we don't know everything yet." Yeah. So that too was a very validating remark for me. So, you know, it's been a very difficult trip. It's been, you know, very hard work, and it's been worth it to me. It's my mission. And the mission's not over yet, because I have one more book to finish.
Yeah,
but I can go on with my life.
Yeah, the first one is accomplished. Congratulations.
Yeah. And you?
Well, my experience is different in the sense that even though it's an historical book and there are lots of historical facts, but I'm not relating the true story of my protagonist, as I already mentioned. And this basically is a story of a journey, as I said. So my protagonist sailed from Marseille all the way to China first to fulfill a promise. And during this time, he meets a friend. He makes friend with Fred. My protagonist is called JJ. He's a French guy, so it's a short name for him. And this friend is his real true connection after a long time. And so when they are stuck in Hong Kong, they have problems there. In order, my protagonist tells himself, in order to fulfill his promise, he agrees to do a couple of illegal things, among them an art deal, which is quite shady. But in the truth is that actually he wants to do that to keep his friend, to keep this friendship. And then they go to China, and of course there is this exterior plot where they have to face several difficulties in order to get to Shanghai, where actually my protagonist is supposed to be. And for the journey is also a journey of discovery. He discovers that he has resources that he didn't know he had, and also that that his behaviors very often is motivated by a traumatic event in his past. And eventually he has to face this past, and he has to decide how, you know, to move from there. So as many journeys, it's not only a physical journey, but it's also an interior journey of discovery. And in the end, he has to decide whether he really wants to grow up or not. So I think the story is, as I said, it's not plotted. It came, quite naturally with lots of twists and turns. So in the end, the feedback I got from the readers was that it was an unexpected plot. And I think it's an enjoyable book, especially if you're reading when traveling, that will take, you know, will be a very good company. And I am anyway, you know, very proud that I managed to write a whole book, because when you never wrote a book before, you know, you publish your first book, and yeah, it's surprising and it's very satisfying. And I also decided to do self-publishing, and that also, you know, I had to learn so many skills, like, for example, using Zoom and doing podcasts. So I think it's really a great journey, and definitely I'm going to write more books. I don't know which ones, but there are more stories to tell, whether in Asia or somewhere else.
And how long did it take you to write it?
The write itself, I think it was not too long, maybe 3-4 months. But then the editing part of it, I had a couple of rounds of editing, really structural editing, and then, of course, line editing. And I think that took more than a year altogether. So that was, yeah, there was also a learning process, definitely. But now I know how to build a book from scratch. So I really wanted to go through all the steps.
Yeah. I think too, editing is such a necessary part of the process, and you can't really avoid that. And the more people, the more eyes you can get on your manuscript, the better, because everybody sees something different. So yeah, it's necessary.
A necessary evil. I hired an editor. I hired an editor for structural. Well, just basic overall editing with two rounds. And then after, when I was done with that, I hired a editing duo to go through and, you know, and look for little inconsistencies and spelling mistakes and, you know, making sure everything added up. So I wanted it to be perfect.
Yeah.
I mean,
even though I believe it's always difficult to be perfect, but if you wait, always wait to be perfect, then you might never get out. So,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. So whereabouts can we find your books? Where are they available?
Oh, right. So my website is www.lauca, so lauca.eu, because I'm a very strong supporter of the European Union, so I always use the EU domain for my website, because I'm also a Qigong teacher, so I also have a website for that. At the moment, I am wide, so the paperback is available on demand, as well as on Amazon, also on demand, and on different you know, websites like Google, Kobo, Amazon, and so on. But I am considering maybe to switch to solely Amazon. But this is a decision I will take in a few weeks, I think. And in any case, on my website, there are also my micro stories. So if somebody wants to read short things, there is a newsletter once per month with some news about my writing, and the micro stories directly to the inbox. And on the website, there will be, of course, the podcast published, the link to the promo, to this awesome Asia promo with awesome writers, as well as any information, further information about my book as well. So I think we can wrap it up. Maybe just one last sentence for each. Carol, you want to start?
So I'm just going to read the blurb of on the back of the book, so that readers or listeners, I should say, can just get an idea about what the book's about. The Nam Legacy is an epic love story set during the 60s and 70s, when the Rolling Stones and Jefferson Airplane drove parents crazy. Teenagers found sexual freedom and peace slogans covered placards. When the Vietnam War abducted the nation's young men and sent them to fight in New Zealand's most controversial campaign. After 18 months in Vietnam, New Zealand soldier Jack Coles thought killing others to stay alive would be the hardest thing he would ever have to live with. He was wrong. Although the nightmare of what he saw and did haunt him constantly, what tortures him the most is what he left behind. Not everyone who lost his life in Vietnam died there, and not everyone who came home from Vietnam ever left there. So you can find that on Amazon, or you can go to my website, which is carolbrunger.com. It's CarolBrunger.com.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Carol. Larry, one last sentence.
Oh, well, can I read a blurb too? On the back of the book. Might as well. I mean, I think that's a good idea. Here's what it says in the back of my book. Her father traded away her youth. Sea bandits stole her freedom. She has one way to get them back. Become the most powerful pirate in the world. Sold as a child to a floating brothel, 26-year-old Yang has finally bought her freedom, only to be kidnapped by a brutal pirate gang and forced to marry their leader. Dragged through stormy seas and lawless bandit havens, Yang must stay scrappy to survive. She embeds herself in the dark business of piracy, carving out a role against the resistance of powerful pirate leaders and Zheng Bozai, her husband's flamboyant male concubine. Caught between bitter rivals fighting for mastery over the pirates and for her heart, Yang faces a choice between two things she never dreamed might be hers, power or love, based on a true story. And like I said, you can find it on Amazon. You can find it at piratequeenbook.com. And thank you for having me.
Perfect. Thank you very much for your time. I don't have a blurb here with me, but I will add it to the podcast so that I also present my blurb. And thank you again to Larry and Carol. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. It's been really enjoyable.
Thank you.
It's been very interesting. Very interesting. I love talking with other authors about their process. So it's been quite a good discussion. Thank you for having me.